What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, before we get into things, I just wanted to let y'all know that today is going to be the last show for the next 2 weeks because I'm going to be headed to Europe for a couple of weeks. I'm going to be going to Amsterdam, to Germany, to Switzerland. I get to go see Taylor Swift again. I'm going to see her in Germany. So looking forward to that. But with that being said, that means there's not going to be shows for the next 2 weeks. We will be back on Monday, July 29th with more shows after today's show. Since you know, we're kind of in a little bit of a sports fan purgatory, I decided I just am going to go ahead and drop off some topics on pretty much every sport that I discuss here. So let's go ahead and start it off with the Trop 5 MLB second half storylines. Just some things that I believe are things we should be potentially looking at to maybe happening or looking forward to coming up in the second half, because you know the All-Star break is coming up next week. So that's basically the second half of the MLB season, and so that anything can change. Literally anything can change. There are always teams that just come out of the woodwork who weren't having a good first half, and then all of a sudden, boom, here they are the second half, and they could be potentially making a World Series run. So let's talk about some storylines that I believe we should be looking at heading into the second half of the Major League Baseball season, beginning with, can Aaron Judge break the single-season home run record? Overall, not just his own in the American League, but also maybe Chase Barry Bonds' record. You know, right now he is actually on pace to outpace what he did when he broke the American League single season home run record a couple years ago, when he won an MVP as well. He's also hovering in that Triple Crown area, because right now he's got a nice solid lead on the home run and the RBIs. He's looking real good in that department. It's just the batting average, I believe he's eighth. Last time I looked, he's batting like a 308 right now. So he's right in that wheelhouse. And if he just keeps it up, he's definitely going to be at least flirting with a Triple Crown. But I'm really more looking at the home run record just because he has not lost a step. The dude is just looking real solid. Now, the Yankees are kind of struggling at the moment, but anything can change. And I'm just looking at Aaron Judge like, hey, we could be potentially discussing him having yet another run or another opportunity and another chance at potentially breaking his own record, but also going for the overall Major League Baseball record and potentially breaking Barry Bonds' record. But who knows if that's going to happen. Obviously, there's a whole second half of the season. Can't account for injuries, of course, but if Aaron Judge stays healthy and Aaron Judge keeps playing at the pace he's playing at, we could be looking at yet another home run record season for Aaron Judge. Then the second topic I'm looking at for here on the Trop 5 MLB second half storylines, will the Astros or the Braves make a second half run? Both of these teams, they started off the first half pretty terrible. And you look at the Astros and Braves, they are both deep rosters. They have excellent baseball players who have won MVPs, who have won Cy Youngs, and they're also two teams who have won championships in recent history. So you always look at the Astros and Braves as being competitive teams, but this year it has not started off that way. The Astros now, they look like they're about to make a run, and I wouldn't be shocked if they make a run. The Braves have been hovering, and they've had their ups and they've had their downs, and they don't seem to get any level of consistency. So with the Braves, I'm not as sold on them as much as I am the Astros. The Astros, I look at their division, I think it's real easy for them to take over their division over the Mariners and the Rangers, because, you know, the Rangers, they're not looking good at all right now. And yes, things can change because they may get some help here with some guys who have been out for a minute. But still, I look at their division and I look at the Astros. And if the Astros just keep it up, they seem to have started to finally get it going with their pitching, because that's really been their issue. Their offense really has not been an issue, and their offense is actually starting to get even better right now. It's the pitching, starting pitching and bullpen. It's been a huge, huge issue for them. But I look at them and I go, yeah, I would not be shocked in any way, shape, and form to see the Astros make a run here. The Braves, I also wouldn't be shocked, but I feel like the Phillies are in their division, so I don't really think they have a shot at the division. But the wild card, of course, they're definitely in line for that. And they're a veteran team that I kind of feel like you can't overlook them regardless of how things look for them in the moment. Then the third topic on my top five MLB second half storylines, who is going to win the American League East? Because it obviously, to me, this is the best division in baseball. Baltimore Orioles, New York Yankees, Boston Red Sox. I'm looking at those three teams. And, you know, Boston more, I wouldn't say I'm sold on them at all. I wouldn't look at them as a championship caliber team just yet. As I mentioned, I kind of feel like with the Red Sox, they need to make a move here at the trade deadline for a potential player who could be a little bit of a game changer for them. And then Baltimore, of course, they've just been one of the most solid, consistent teams all season. And then the Yankees, they are on the downside of things right now, but they could easily get it going. They could easily turn things around. They are very capable of it. And I really do expect all three of these teams to make it a battle. The Blue Jays, you know, they have been known to make a second half run. I wouldn't really expect them to. And then the Rays, they aren't really looking like they're going to be threatening at all. So I kind of look at these three teams, the Orioles, the Yankees, and the Red Sox to make this a battle to the bitter end, especially between Baltimore and New York. But Boston has really had a very interesting season. They've actually been one of the more consistent teams. They had no expectations coming into the year. It was kind of rocky to start the season, but for the most part, they have really held it down. Starting pitching has been solid. Bullpen's been pretty solid. They've been getting a lot of solid offense from Devers and O'Neill and Jaron Duran. So they've got some guys just coming out of the woodwork. And I look at Boston, and I feel like they could fuck some shit up for some people, especially in this division. Then the fourth topic on my top five MLB second half storylines, can anyone stop the Phillies? To me, the Phillies are the best team in the league. While I've ranked Baltimore over them the last couple of weeks, it's more just what's happening in real time. But if you take a look at the Phillies, this team is stacked. First of all, they're only, 2 years removed from being in the World Series. Yes, they lost the World Series, but they still went. And then last year, made a nice little run. And then this year, they look like the best team. I mean, their starting pitching is just flat out phenomenal. They have three dudes who are aces. And then you look at them offensively. Schwarber just came back from the injured list and is lighting it up. They just dominated the Dodgers. They just swept their fucking asses over this last week. I mean, the Phillies are just killing it. And I look at the Phillies and I go, who is going to beat them? Who's going to beat that starting pitching? Who is going to beat that lineup, that batting lineup with the fucking killers they have? You've got Trey Turner. You've got Bryce Harper. You've got Kyle Schwarber. You've got some really bad motherfuckers behind the plate. And then, of course, like I said, the starting pitching's great. The bullpen's great. The Phillies really don't have a weakness. So to me, it's going to take like an epic collapse from the Phillies to basically fall out of contention for me for being the favorite for the World Series at this point in time. And then the last topic on my top five MLB second half storylines, who is a potential sleeper team that I look at that has had either a rocky or just kind of low level first half start who potentially could be that team that I wouldn't say wins the World Series, but maybe hits the wild card and takes out a random team or just makes a nice little playoff run to actually, or like end of the season run to win their division. And that potential sleeper team to me, I'm looking at is the St. Louis Cardinals. They've been, you know, the Cardinals historically are actually one of the greatest franchises in Major League Baseball history. But over the past, I want to say, especially like 3 years, they've been a bottom of the barrel, low level shit team. I mean, it's weird because I'm always used to the Cardinals, even if it doesn't look like they're going to be good. You look at them and you go, well, they still have this ace, or they still have Albert Pujols when they had him, or they still have this guy, or they still have. You look at the Cardinals right now and they really haven't had that guy. Now, they do have Paul Goldschmidt, who has been their dude over the years. but he's been having a down year for Paul Goldschmidt. Now, don't be surprised, though, if he gets it going in the second half, and that's kind of what I'm looking at with St. Louis. They've slowly started to really put it together over the last couple of weeks. They are in a division where, yes, the Brewers have dominated it for the first half, but the Brewers are also a team that's just been known to blow it in the second half. The Cardinals do have some potential guys who could, you know, carry them through a second half. You look at Sonny Gray, who's actually had a pretty solid year at the starting pitching role. He's obviously their ace right now. And then you have another guy who's just kind of appeared out of nowhere, Alec Burleson, who's just becoming a huge source of offense for them. And you've got Gorman, who's actually been one of their top guys, especially with hitting home runs. And then, like I said, you look at Goldschmidt, and yes, he's having a terrible year so far, but he's a dude who can get hot. I'm not sure what his deal is this year. Maybe it's just, I don't know, maybe he's got some nagging injury that none of us are aware of or something, or maybe he's just getting old. Regardless, he's a dude you can't overlook. And so I kind of look at the Cardinals as being a potential sleeper team who could not only maybe win their division, but also maybe kind of be a team who makes a little bit of noise come postseason. All right, now moving on to the NFL and my top five NFL storylines for the upcoming season. Because guess what, y'all? Training camp starts next week. How fucking insane is that? It's always great when football is around the corner because, preseason starts next month. So we have some football right around the corner. So what kind of storylines do I think are going to dominate the season, or at least the beginning of the season? Number one to me is Aaron Rodgers. What's this dude going to look like? Because, you know, he's coming off of a horrific injury. An Achilles injury is a horrific injury. And he's a 40-year-old quarterback. He's an old veteran. Now, Aaron Rodgers is still Aaron Rodgers. I expect him to come out and have a good season, at least. Now, he plays for the Jets. And that's, you never know what to expect from the Jets. But they have made some moves in the offseason. Especially on the offensive line, which is what they really need to do because that's why he tore his Achilles last year. But so this is going to be technically Aaron Rodgers' first legit season with the Jets, and it's obviously going to be intriguing. He is a four-time MVP. Is he going to be able to turn things around for the Jets? Are they actually going to be a legitimate team, or are they just going to fade off into existence and be a terrible loser trash team like they normally are? Who the fuck knows? But regardless, Aaron Rodgers is definitely going to be a storyline. I mean, he was a storyline even when he was injured. So obviously, seeing what he's going to do on the field and coming back from such a debilitating injury, it's just going to be interesting from that aspect to see what he could do. And also, if he can make the Jets look like a legitimate team, because at the end of the day, he's still Aaron fucking Rodgers. He's still one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And if he plays at the level that he plays at, who knows? We could be seeing the New York Jets make a playoff run, and that would be weird in and of itself. Then the second storyline on my top five NFL storylines for the upcoming season, Caleb Williams. Can he turn things around for the Chicago Bears? I mean, the Chicago Bears have historically never had a great quarterback, ever. There is not one quarterback you can look at and go, that is a GOAT. That is a game changer. That is a great guy. Yes, they've had some guys who are good quarterbacks. They've even had a Super Bowl, like Jim McMahon. He won them a Super Bowl. But come on, when you look at Jim McMahon, he ain't no Tom Brady. He ain't no Joe Montana. He ain't no Troy Aikman. He ain't no Steve Young. He ain't no Brett Favre. He's just Jim McMahon. He's on the level of Trent Dilfer. Sorry, y'all, but he is. But Caleb Williams is a number one overall pick. So this could potentially be the greatest quarterback the Bears have had. And that says a lot because this is a historic franchise, historically known for their defense. But who knows? Maybe we're seeing the future here with the Chicago Bears. You never know what's going to happen. But in my opinion, from what I saw on the field from Caleb Williams, I think he is the real deal. And that I'm trying not to vomit as I say that because he started off at Oklahoma. And if you don't know, I'm a Texas Longhorns fan, so fuck Oklahoma. And then he went to USC. So once again, I'm a Texas Longhorns fan, so fuck USC. But I watched him on the field. He's a good-ass quarterback. So if he translates into a good NFL quarterback, the Bears actually could finally have a franchise quarterback. They've made some good moves this offseason to surround him with a couple of offensive weapons. To me, the problem's always been the offensive line. I mean, they did Justin Fields zero favors his career there because they gave him no offensive line. So we'll see what they do with Caleb Williams, but I really just am intrigued to see if the Chicago Bears finally have a legit franchise quarterback. Then the third topic on my top five NFL storylines of the upcoming season. The Texans are all in, or are they a one-season wonder? This team really came on strong last year. We didn't have a lot of expectations for them because, you know, they picked up C.J. Stroud, and I thought he was going to be a good NFL quarterback, but, I mean, to have the season he had last year was nobody expected that shit. And then, you know, they had a first-year coach. And so you kind of look at them and you go, are they just that one-season wonder where everybody was kind of overlooking them? Or are they a legit team? Because real talk, this offseason, they look like they're all in. First of all, this is going to be C.J. Stroud's second year. So if he's builds off of what he did last year, he should be a fucking phenomenal quarterback this year. Then they traded for Stephon Diggs, and that is only going to make C.J. Stroud better, in my opinion, because no matter what anybody thinks about Stephon Diggs, I really don't understand how he's got this whole bad guy role, because he really hasn't done anything noteworthy. Just because you voice your opinion on contract situations or whatever, that to me is, that's not being a cancer to your team. He wasn't getting arrested. He wasn't starting fights with teammates. He might have had some disagreements, but I'm not even really aware of those. I don't even hear any teammates, ex-teammates of him from the Vikings or from the Bills who have really anything negative to say about Stephon Diggs. So I don't really know how he's earned this negative reputation. But to me, I look at Stephon Diggs and he's always been a beast on the field. And the Texans, they were good through the air last year. And so you add in a Diggs, I think the Texans could probably be one of the best offenses in the league, at least from a scoring standpoint, because I kind of expect them to put up a lot of numbers with Stephon Diggs out there. Then they also picked up Joe Mixon as well, so that kind of bolsters up their running game, which they was okay last year. And so you get Joe Mixon in there, who's actually a guy who is a playmaker. He could catch, he could pass. He's had, you know, opportunities to pass the ball. So he's actually a very well-rounded running back. So I think they just added him in. And then they also, on the defensive side of the ball, added Jimmy Warden in the secondary. So, and that defense was stout last year. So I kind of look at the Texans. They are in a terrible last division as well. So it's a, I look at the Texans and I go, I think people got to look at the Texans and maybe look at them as a legit contender this year, because the addition of Stephon Diggs, I feel like, just kind of puts them on a whole other level between he and C.J. Stroud, because I was completely impressed with what I saw with Stroud last year. And adding in Stephon Diggs, man, that's a great weapon for him to have. Also, Stephon Diggs is going to be playing for a contract as well. So usually contract years, you tend to go a little bit harder so you can get the big deal next year. Then my fourth topic on the top five NFL storylines for the upcoming season, I look at the NFC North, and I feel like anybody could win this division, because I think if they all kind of play to their potential, they could potentially be over 500 teams. And, you know, Chicago, there's tons of questions because they got a rookie quarterback. They really haven't been a good team in a while, but I don't know, man. Caleb Williams could come out and have a year like C.J. Stroud did last year and completely upend this division and at least make them a contender. Not meaning they're going to even make the playoffs, but I'm just saying I feel like the NFC North is going to be a battle between all four teams throughout. Because I look at, like I said, I look at the Bears and there's a lot of questions, but as far as questions go, they're not just negative. They could potentially be positive. And then with the Vikings, same thing, because they're coming into the season with no Kirk Cousins, so they don't really have that hanging over them anymore. So it's going to be between Sam Darnold and then the rookie, J.J. McCarthy. Darnold is a capable quarterback, but if he starts to fuck up, just throw J.J. McCarthy in. Why not? You've got fucking Jefferson out there at wide receiver, so who cares, man? Just toss the ball up to him. I kind of feel like at some point we're going to see McCarthy. But I feel like the Vikings are another team, kind of like the Bears, where you're like, you look at them and you go, yeah, there's a lot of questions, but they could still be a pretty decent team who hovers around 500 and kind of makes it interesting in the division. And then, of course, I look at the Detroit Lions, and they won the division, and they were one of the top teams in the league last year. So are they going to fall back, or are they going to keep it up? And then the Green Bay Packers, another team who actually had a surprisingly good team last year and also a surprisingly good run last year in the playoffs. But could they get better from that, or are they going to regress? So I look at the NFC North as probably the most interesting division in football this year, because I think all four teams are going to battle it out. And even though I don't think all four teams are going to make the playoffs, of course, I just kind of look at them and I feel like it's going to be, they're all within like a couple of games within each other. And it probably is going to come down to the end of the season to see who wins the division. And then last but not least on my top five NFL storylines of the upcoming season, can Kansas City Chiefs three-peat? We have never had a team three-peat. Now, the Kansas City Chiefs offseason has been pretty terrible. Other than Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, pretty much this entire team has been getting arrested or having some insanely negative press surrounding them. And when I say getting arrested, these aren't people just getting arrested for like a DUI or some little menial thing. They're actually getting arrested for, like, you know, Rashee Rice causing a huge-ass car accident and running away from it on a highway. And then they have another asshole who let his dogs rot outside and starved them to death. And then he went and was beating up his spouse or whoever the fuck. But he did get released eventually after the domestic violence charges. But regardless, Kansas City Chiefs have not had a good offseason for the most part. It's actually been a very tumultuous offseason for them because just a lot of the team has actually been getting arrested, and it's just been a lot of negative press. And you already have pressure on you because it's a three-peat year, and everybody expects you to be a good team regardless. I mean, you are the Super Bowl champions, but then also you have the greatest quarterback in the league right now, Patrick Mahomes. So all eyes are going to be on them. And it's just all eyes were going to be on them anyways. But now it's like you're looking at it three-peat. Now me, of course, winning a championship, one championship alone is exceptionally difficult. So trying to go for three is even more difficult. And, you know, you can't account for injuries. And you can't account for what the rest of the league is going to do. I mean, we're getting Joe Burrow back. And who knows what the Bills are going to look like. And who knows what the rest of their division is going to look like. The Chargers could actually be really good because you got Jim Harbaugh in there now. So the Kansas City three-peat, while it was definitely going to be difficult anyways, I think a lot of the off-season drama is going to cost them. And I don't see them three-peating, but I still think they're going to be a good team this year. Now moving on to my NBA storylines and the top five NBA offseason storylines. Most of these have to deal with trades or potential names out there for trades. So let's go ahead and start it off with the one that isn't about trades. And it's, will there be a rookie standout in the summer league this year? Because in basketball, basically right after the draft, the summer league begins. And a lot of people don't take a lot of stock into the summer league, but if you actually are a basketball fan, you don't have to watch it, but if you want to pay attention, because if somebody's performing well in the summer league, that is the best news you can hear, because it usually means their game is going to translate over well into the professional league. And lots of times we have guys who have great summer leagues and who continue that on and have great careers. One example, and he has only had one season technically in the league, but Chet Holmgren, when he was drafted, he was going off in the summer league. I mean, he just had a great summer league. And then unfortunately he got injured in the summer league and then missed his entire rookie season. And then technically his rookie season was just this last year. And he had a phenomenal year. So you look at somebody like Chet Holmgren, if their game translates over like that, well, then that's fantastic. And, you know, like when I was talking about the NBA draft, there weren't a whole lot of names out there. There weren't a whole lot of standouts. So I look at the Summer League this year, and I'm just throwing out a couple of different names that maybe people aren't looking at. One of them, of course, everybody's looking at, and that is, of course, is Bronny James. He's LeBron James' kid. So, of course, all eyes are going to be on him regardless of what he does, what expectations people have for him. No matter what, eyes were going to be on Bronny. So far, his summer league has just been meh. He hasn't scored a lot of points, and it's just been meh. But you never know. What if he does have an excellent summer league and ends up being a standout? Then who knows? His game could translate over well. Now, it does look like he's actually going to end up being playing in the G League for the majority of the season. So for all of y'all who thought LeBron and Bronny were going to play on the same team, it doesn't look like it's happening this year, at least. Now, it might. It could potentially do that, but it actually looks like Bronny's headed to the G League from what I read as a Lakers fan. Another guy to point out who could potentially have a good summer league would be Zach Edey. I actually was kind of hoping the Lakers were going to draft Zach Edey. It didn't work out that way. I'm actually not upset with their draft pick at all, but I'm just saying he was the dude I was looking at who I thought was going to be a good addition for any team. Not saying he's going to be Chet Holmgren-esque, but I think he's definitely going to be a presence in the paint. And I think he could actually be the next, at least good big man. I kind of see him being kind of like the Lopez brothers, being, you know, not really going to take over a game and be the superstar of the team, but be all reliable. Be that guy you can always count on. Be the guy who's always in the middle, getting the rebounds. Be that guy who makes the big shot when necessary. And that's kind of how I look at Zach Edey, and maybe he could be that guy who's a standout in the summer league. And then another guy I'm looking at is Dillingham. Now, he ended up getting traded to the Minnesota Timberwolves in the draft, and I think this is a good pickup for the Timberwolves. You know, he comes out of Kentucky, if I remember correctly. I always get Kentucky and Kansas mixed up because they're blue and start with K's, but I'm almost positive Dillingham comes out of Kentucky. And he's a good-ass guard. And, you know, the Timberwolves were already a high-flying team last year, so if Dillingham is a standout in the summer league, watch out for the Minnesota Timberwolves next year, because this guy could just add a whole other layer to an already explosive offense. All right, then the second topic on my top five NBA offseason storylines, Trae Young. Are the Atlanta Hawks going to trade him, or are they going to keep him? Now, I kind of feel like this has been a storyline for about three seasons now. It looks like since they traded away DeJounte Murray, they're probably not trading Trae Young away. But from what it sounds like, Trae Young has never been happy as an Atlanta Hawk. He might have been happy the first season or two, but, you know, ever since the trade rumors started, I just kind of feel like he's never been happy there. He's never really wanted to play there. And it just kind of feels like it's time for him to go. And that's not a diss at anybody. It's not a diss at the Hawks or Trae Young. I just feel like it's one of those situations where it's like, just trade the dude already. Let's just cut this cord and see if you could get something for him and if he could go do something else with his career. And, you know, hopefully win a championship or contribute to a team that can make a playoff run. But it kind of feels like every season, not just off season, but every season we hear the name Trae Young bubbling up, especially around the trade deadline. But we'll see. It kind of looks like he's going to be staying with Atlanta this year. But who knows? Maybe that's what they say this week. Could be different next week. Then the third topic on my top five NBA offseason storylines, Lauri Markkanen. He's another guy with the Utah Jazz where a lot of trade rumors have been discussed with him. Now, he had a fantastic year last year. He was pretty much the only shining star that the Utah Jazz had last year. And they actually had a pretty decent season. I mean, for being not really having much of a roster outside of Markkanen. He's been in the trade rumors basically since the trade deadline last year. And then once the NBA draft started getting going, it looks like he was pretty much almost out of there It's just Utah didn't really like the trades that they were getting. They felt like they could get more. And who knows, maybe they can, and maybe they're going to hold on to him. But I kind of feel like you look at Markkanen, he's a dude that I feel like we're going to be hearing about trade rumors yet again, either all the way throughout the offseason, all the way through the regular season, through the trade deadline. I feel like he's going to be one of those dudes who we keep hearing about where he's a potential trade market guy. And I feel like he could make a difference on a lot of teams. Then number four on my top five NBA offseason storylines, another trade, Brandon Ingram of the New Orleans Pelicans. This is another one that around the end of the season, these are when the trade rumors really started ramping up for him. Then the NBA draft rolled around, and then they really started to heat up. And now it pretty much looks like the Pelicans are trading away Brandon Ingram regardless. And in my opinion, because he used to play for the Lakers, I love Brandon Ingram. I think he is a solid, reliable dude. Now, always the question with Ingram are the injuries. But, I mean, that's the case with a lot of guys in the league right now. But Ingram is a solid player, so I feel like whoever gets Ingram is getting a real good dude. So I kind of feel like we're going to be seeing him get traded away from the Pelicans here, I would say, definitely before the season starts. And then the last topic on my top five NBA offseason storylines, another trade, Zach LaVine. We've been hearing about him potentially being traded away from the Chicago Bulls for about a year and a half now, it feels like. I kind of feel like it's eventually going to happen. Who knows when? But, it's been discussed for so long that it kind of feels like the same thing with Trae Young, where it's just one of those things where it's going to happen. It's just taken so freaking long for whatever reason. I wouldn't be shocked to see Zach LaVine start the season off with the Bulls and then get traded at some point around the trade deadline. And then the last topic for today's episode, the top five upcoming fights between UFC and boxing, because we actually do have some pretty solid fights coming up here. These are in order of how interested I am in them, beginning with number one, which is UFC 305. That's going to be Dricus du Plessis versus Israel Adesanya. Now, I'm a big Adesanya fan. I've just always loved his style of fighting, and I just think he's just a fun fighter to watch. But du Plessis he's a killer too. So I feel like this is going to be a really good fight to watch. It is for du Plessis' middleweight belt. It's going to take place on August 17th. And I just feel like this is going to be an excellent matchup between two excellent fighters. You know, Adesanya, he's had a couple of fights that he's lost. But I wouldn't be shocked if he gets a belt back here. Then the second fight I'm looking forward to on my top five upcoming fights would be UFC 304. Leon Edwards versus Bilal Muhammad. It's going to be for Edwards' welterweight belt. That takes place on July 27th. And then Leon Edwards, you know, he's just a dude who's taken the UFC by storm, just like Pereira. I kind of feel like these two dudes are very overlooked dudes who have just been making a name for themselves, and not a lot of people are taking them seriously. And they just have to keep fighting for their belts and knocking motherfuckers out and just saying, see, I still win. Hey, bring on somebody who could beat me up. But we'll see if Edwards is able to maintain his championship status after that one. Then the third fight I'm looking forward to on my top five upcoming fights, this one is a boxing match. It's going to be between Israel Madrimov versus Terrence Crawford. Terrence Crawford is definitely one of the most interesting boxers in boxing today. And they're going to be fighting for Madrimov's junior middleweight belt on August 3rd. Then the fourth top five upcoming fight, it hasn't technically been set yet. It was actually supposed to be set last year, but an injury, of course, delayed it. But basically, whatever John Jones' next fight is going to be. Because it could potentially actually be his last fight. He has said that. John Jones to me is the greatest UFC fighter of all time. I enjoy his style of fighting. I love watching him fight, and he's a bad motherfucker. But at the same time, he is getting up there in age, and he just hasn't been fighting as much as he used to, because, I mean, that's just what happens when you get older. But regardless, even if the next fight is not his last fight, it's going to be a good one. Now, it was supposed to be against Stipe Miocic, and it's probably still going to be that, but it hasn't been confirmed. Nothing is set in stone, and there's been a lot of other rumors about who John Jones could be going up against. But regardless of who he goes up against, it looks like it's going to take place in November, and it could potentially be his last fight. And if it is, man, we could be seeing the greatest fighter go out at the top of his game. But also, if he gets knocked the fuck out, then maybe it won't be his last, but it could be. Who knows? Regardless, it is something on his mind. It is something he said. And whether it is his last fight or not, I'm looking forward to it because I'm a big John Jones fan. And then rounding out the top five upcoming fights, I've kind of avoided discussing this fight because I hate gimmick fights. I really, really, really hate the gimmick fights. Don't get me wrong. I get it. I get why we have them because, for one, boxing, like actual legit sanctioned boxing, it's so corrupt in so many fucking ways and always has been. And so many fighters have just been screwed over. But then also, it's not even just getting screwed over out of a win. It's that, like, they get screwed out of money. The promoters are terrible. And boxing has just been overshadowed by UFC, especially over the last like 10 years, because the UFC actually knows how to keep people interested, and they have an excellent model on how they schedule things and just how they always keep the UFC up front, forefront, and they just continue to build. And if boxing were smart, they would figure out some way to take a model just like UFC, because boxing is great. It's not that we don't have good boxers. There are so many excellent boxers out there, but it's just that it's so corrupt and there's so many fucked up things about it that I understand why there's so many of these gimmick fights, because they make so much money because it's not, you know, it's not in that boxing realm, and you get paid. And I can't argue against motherfuckers getting paid. I also can't argue, even though I hate these guys, the Paul brothers and what they've done with their boxing careers. I think they're terrible boxers, by the way. I've seen their form. I don't look at them and go, oh yeah, these guys could easily step in the ring with fucking Terrence Crawford. You know, I just brought him up. You ain't stepping in the ring with Terrence Crawford. That guy will fuck you up. That's what I think about the Paul brothers. But as far as businessmen, they're fucking smart as hell. They've been putting on these boxing events that just get bigger and bigger, and they make so much fucking money from them that you can't blame a motherfucker like Mike Tyson for actually taking on this event. So Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul is supposed to happen November 15th. It was actually supposed to happen here like in a week or two. But then, you know, Mike Tyson had a problem with an ulcer and it had to get delayed. The only reason why anybody is looking forward to this, though, is because all of us, myself included, want to see Mike Tyson knock this motherfucker out. That's it. That's all I'm hoping for. I wouldn't care if Jake Paul fucking died in the ring. That's how much I want. Well, that's what I want to see in this fucking one. I want to see him get fucked up. That would be amazing. And you could call me a terrible person. Don't give a shit. I want to see this dude get fucked up, and so does everybody else. I'm just the only one saying, I don't give a shit if he dies in the ring. He could be that motherfucker who dies in the ring, because he's going up against a beast. I don't care how old Mike Tyson is. Those hands, I've seen the videos of him practicing. He's still got bricks of steel. Bricks of steel. Yeah, I know, that don't make much sense. Bricks of steel are what Mike Tyson has for fucking fists. So all of us are looking forward to Jake Paul getting knocked the fuck out. Now, who knows if that's going to happen, because you just don't know. It's a fight. But I really haven't discussed it much, just because, like I said, I'm not into the whole gimmick fight thing. I think it's a spit in the face to boxing, really, just like for legit boxers in general. But I can't argue against what these Paul brothers are doing and how much money they've been making and how interesting they've been making it too. People are actually interested in the fights that they're doing over fights with real, like, legitimate boxers. So, you know, you can't argue against it. But like I said, I haven't really discussed it because I hate gimmick fights. I don't discuss gimmick fights. And I think the Paul brothers are terrible boxers. Just because I've watched them. They don't have good boxing form. They're not actual boxers. They are, they're fucking little kids pretending they're fucking boxers. And yeah, they're making, like I said, making a lot of money doing it. But I just think they're terrible ass boxers who I don't want to watch. But I do want to watch Mike Tyson knock a motherfucker out. I love watching Mike Tyson knock a motherfucker out. So it would be hilarious to see him knock Jake Paul the fuck out. And that's what we're all hoping for on November 15th, if it happens. Because you never know. Mike Tyson is old. And, you know, it already got delayed once. Who knows what's going to happen between now and November. But if it pops off, it's happening November 15th. And we can, if you got Netflix, you don't have to pay-per-view this one. It's a Netflix, motherfucker. So Netflix, you got Netflix? You can watch this beautiful event, and hopefully we're going to get to see Mike Tyson knock another motherfucker out. All right, y'all. Like I said, I'm going to be out for 2 weeks. I'm going to be gallivanting around Europe, having myself a good old vacation, and I will be back on July 29th. So enjoy the next couple of weeks of sports, and I will talk to you fools when I get back.